trucking on. And I'm trucking on. Move her on down the line, another town will do me fine. I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on.
Howdy, friends, and welcome to Trucking On. I'm your host, Ward Richmond. I really appreciate you tuning in today, and I hope you enjoy the show. Cole Hooper, what's up, brother?
Hey, man. How are you?
Welcome to your first episode of Trucking On.
Happy to be here, man. It's been a long time coming.
That's right. This is not the Cole Hooper episode, though, ladies and gentlemen, as you would be very excited to hear. However, we're going to break Cole in today with a North American industrial real estate market update, reviewing the end of year numbers from 2023. How about that? Are you excited or what?
I'm excited.
This is what we do, man. We do NORTAM real estate, industrial real estate.
That's right.
You do it more so than I do it even. That's why I need you on here. Tell me what's going on for real. So I think we're going to start talking about the United States of America, and then we'll move up to Canada, and then we'll travel down south of the border to Mexico. And I believe last year we did like 70 deals-ish as a team in about 50 different cities throughout North America. It's where we really specialize. What would you say is the toughest market to do a deal in right now in North America?
Toughest market. Man, that's a tough one.
And by that, I mean we're repping tenants, so finding space for tenants, you know, and navigating that landscape of limited availability.
Yeah. In terms of like new surveys, I mean, I would say, I think Miami's probably up there. They seem to have a lack of availability a lot of the times. Anywhere in the Northeast, Lehigh Valley, we've had issues in.
Finding land up there is tough.
Finding land, yeah, especially the land that we're looking for, which is, you know, industrial, heavy industrial type land. That seems to be pretty difficult to find. I'd say those are the big ones.
Right on. So here's what happened last year. We've been like having a nice equilibrium. If we look back 5 years, 2018, and by equilibrium, I mean supply and demand. So what's coming online and what's being absorbed. So if we look back at 2018, it was 280 million square feet under construction completions, and then about 280 million absorbed. The next year, 2019, 280 million delivered again, 220 million absorbed. 2020, the year of the pandemic, it bumped up to 370 million built and 280 million absorbed again. So a little less of equilibrium there. And then 2021 is when we kept on par with construction. So 370 million built, but then it jumped to 600 million absorbed. And that's like 2021's when shit hit the fan basically because of the pandemic, right? You remember that year?
Oh yeah. Everybody's stockpiling and adding to their inventory and yeah, absolutely bonkers. I think every industrial broker would tell you they probably had their best real estate year that year.
We did as a team.
That's right.
That was our best year.
It was. I'm sure it was a lot of people's.
It was crazy. And people were just signing leases, very fast. They were going in and getting deals done super aggressively. And I think, you know, because in the pandemic, e-commerce spiked. And from, I think, like 17% of retail sales to 22%. So it had this huge spike. And because of that spike in demand, they were running out of products everywhere. So all of the third-party logistics companies and the shippers who are supplying these products to these customers built out a huge new network of facilities to handle this uptick in e-commerce. I think that was the main cause of that spike.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Nobody's going to, you know, the malls or retail shops, and everybody's, you know, ordering online.
Yep. And then in 2022, we had a nice equilibrium again, like the best one that we'd seen since 2018 in terms of supply and demand being aligned. And that was 480 million was built and 500 million was absorbed. So still more absorption than construction, which was a rarity really in the history of industrial real estate, I believe. And then 2023, we have a major imbalance that occurred last year, and we had 600 million delivered, which is a record in the history of industrial real estate in America, and only 230 million absorbed. And I'll go on to say that I was just at the with the people at Prologis, the good people of Prologis, and they had a little event, and all of their national leaders were speaking at it, and they noted that that this 230 million, a lot of that was build-to-suit absorption that was from 2 years back that had already been started. So it's almost like an inflated absorption number, but activity really slowed down in the U.S., and that's 2.6 times the amount of absorption was delivered. So that's not good, really, for if you're a real estate developer. However, if you're a tenant, that means there's opportunity in the marketplace right now. And what happened in 2023? Interest, like the interest rates, just really, I think, stalled out a lot of corporate America. It stalled out all the development that was under construction got delivered. But I think that now they've stopped new construction pretty much. We're seeing very limited new starts happening now. I think we went from 80 million a year ago in Dallas to 30 million.
That sounds right.
Yep. Now, just as a little example there.
Which is kind of back to what we've been doing historically. You know,
that's right.
30%, 30 million, absorbing 30 million around there.
Yep, that's right. Vacancy rates have gone up, but the construction pipeline is slowing down. So what's going to happen now, I hope, is that most of this space is going to eventually get absorbed. And actually, to just keep talking about the information I got from Prologis, which is always great information to get because they have more data on this topic than any other company in the world, I would say, just because they're the largest owner of industrial real estate. And that's that they think that the vacancy should level out and start moving back down in the summer of 2025.
Right.
So yep. We've still got a year and some change where tenants can take advantage of these soft spots in the market, which there are all over the country, I think, in certain areas. Mm-hmm. In Dallas, there's some soft spots, there's some not so soft spots.
Soft spots in Dallas, and you guys will talk about it later. But yeah, probably in that 200,000 to 400,000 square foot range, I would say would be soft spots in Dallas.
The Inland Empire has major soft spots right now.
Yep, LA, also even Toronto, which we'll get to later. Lots of subleases in both of those markets, really.
Yeah, a lot of people are subleasing space. So the forecast moving through 2024, according to our research team at Colliers, appears to show, I can't see this on my screen, but basically we're going to have much smaller construction starts than we've seen in the past 5 years. And then the deliveries are just going to keep gradually decreasing over the course of this year. I think it's a good time to start building at the end of this year and then deliver basically at the beginning of 2026. And Q1 2026, I think that is going to be a great time to bring new product to the market once all of this stuff that's been built is going to be getting absorbed. And that's probably how long it'll take, is like 2 more years. So let's see here. Yeah, it shows here that we're expecting in 2024 for the equilibrium to come a lot closer. So 370 million square feet of construction and absorption of 260 million is what Colliers is predicting. So that'll be good. And I'm going to put this PowerPoint on a link to the PowerPoint in the show notes so you guys can all check this out, what we're talking about right here. And we have all of these graphs that go along with it if you want to check it out. If you're really into industrial real estate and you're still listening right now. So, Cole, what do you think about this next part here? As completions fall, vacancy will stabilize. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I think it makes sense. As completions fall, vacancy will stabilize.
Yep. And then the next slide is just about vacancy plateauing in late 2024 at functional levels. So Colliers thinks vacancy will plateau at the end of this year. Prologis thinks the middle of next year. So we'll see who's right. I will go with in between.
That's a pretty good guess.
It's pretty good.
That's a pretty good guess.
Yeah. The Deadly Tiger Squad prediction is going to be February 2025, vacancy will stabilize.
And stabilizing meaning at around 6.5%.
Yes, that's what we're thinking. And it was like 9% back in 2010 was the average national vacancy rate. And then at the peak of like the post-pandemic boom, it got down to 3.6%. And now it's up to what, like 6% right now. So we expect that it'll go up to about 6.6% and then start trickling back down again. But I mean, the bottom line is now is the time, if you're a tenant, to go sign a lease, to take advantage of this market. If you think you're going to be around, you think you're going to need industrial real estate and you're debating on what to do and you want to get into a new market, now's the time to get into a new market and lock down a great deal. Now, most of the landlords, would you say they're holding firm on rates?
Yeah, I think they're holding firm on rates. I think, they're offering more. I think they're offering more TI dollars a lot of the times, you know, maybe a little bit more free months of rent than what we were seeing a couple of years ago. They're really trying to keep that base rate, what they underwrote when they built the building, or at least close to. I think they're really trying to keep those rates steady for sure.
Yep. And I do think like if there's like a smaller ownership group, those are the ones that you can really negotiate some good deals with. Or if they have a low basis in the building, they're not owned by some big institutional fund that has to hit their pro forma numbers. We've seen some good deals come out of that, the more localized ownerships with the low basis in their building. They want to do deals and get it done.
Long-term holders, they're not trying to flip the land or flip the building. That's exactly right.
And I mean, there are markets in DFW, in LA, I've heard of, and I think Phoenix, you can go get deals right now, and some ridiculous amounts of free rent are being handed out on larger deals in the softer submarkets. So that's there. And then, I think these rent bumps got out of control in 21 and 22. And I think those have trickled back down too. And you can negotiate some lower rent bumps. What do you think about that?
I think it depends on the size of the transaction. I'm actually working on a few deals right now. And I mean, they're smaller, 10 to 50,000 square feet. And a lot of times landlords are still pushing 5% 4% plus, excuse me. In Indy, for one transaction we're working on, I mean, landlords are really holding firm on 5% increases.
5%?
5%, still 5% to this day. And they have comps to prove it. Now, I don't know what brokers are representing those tenants that are getting the 5% bumps. It seems crazy to me, but they're getting it, and there's a lot of comps out there to prove it. So they're still, you know, pushing bumps on those smaller square foot ranges. I think though on the, you know, 50,000 plus, 100,000 plus, you can get back into the 3.5-4% type bumps, which I think is, you know, more standard these days.
Yeah. There's so little space of the little space out there in the
market. That's right. And no one's, you know, I mean, it's so expensive to build those, you know, 50,000 square foot multi-tenant buildings. You know, instead of building three of those, you could just build one 300,000 square foot building. So, that size of space is just getting tougher and tougher to find really anywhere in the country on those types of transactions.
Yeah. If we're looking into some markets in particular, what's happening there in terms of vacancy rates? So the markets with increased opportunity, the most increased levels of opportunity, I'd say, because they have the highest vacancy rates in terms of year over year change. Treasure Coast, Florida. I don't know. Have you done a deal there? Have you found any treasure? Cole and I don't know where Treasure Coast, Florida is. That explains this. Somebody built some warehouses there.
Ghost.
Is it Treasure Island? Cole, find me a warehouse full of gold over there. Hey, Treasure Coast.
Or what's a pirate's favorite fast food restaurant?
Long John Silver's?
Arby's.
So who knows what the Treasure Coast is? Can you Google that? We need our producer here. Charleston, South Carolina.
I'm assuming Jacksonville, maybe?
Charleston, South Carolina is not the Treasure Coast, Florida, but they're number two in terms of increased vacancy, and they have 10.3% vacancy there to take advantage of. And then Austin has a huge amount of vacancy, and that's because they built like the size of their whole market last year and the last couple of years, I believe. They're like 50 million and they had 30 million under construction or something like that. I don't know the exact numbers, but Austin's up to 13.8% vacancy at the end of the year. Savannah's high. Like Savannah and Charleston, they're being impacted because these East Coast ports were so on fire with ocean cargo coming in post-COVID. And I think that's just slowed down a lot. You know, we were working on all these transload projects, and these transloads are, a lot of them that got built aren't being operated. They're on the market for sale. A lot of them that were going to get built never got built. So that's because of the slowdown in ocean freight. So Savannah and Charleston are on this list of the most increased vacancy for that reason. Then we got Greenville, Spartanburg, South Carolina. And I think these are all just a function of these smaller markets historically that had a frenzy post-COVID, and then they built a ton of warehouse space. But I assume they'll get absorbed eventually. And then last on this list of the top increases in vacancy is Phoenix, Arizona. And that was, you know, everyone went to Phoenix post-COVID because LA was out of space. So I think that really helped the Phoenix market out, and then they overbuilt a bit. So they have 7.5% vacancy, still a healthy vacancy rate in my mind.
I tend to agree.
South Florida, Minneapolis, St. Louis, Chicago, Columbia, Richmond, their vacancy rate is the least amount changed. It's relatively steady. So all of those markets had very good development fundamentals and didn't get too out of balance with what happened in 2023. And then the markets that did not get built enough would be Cleveland, Ohio, Detroit, and Huntsville, Alabama. And all of those have had negative year over year change. So their vacancy rates have gone down.
Yeah, and we have active requirements in both Detroit and around the Huntsville, Alabama area. And it's tough to find space. So that makes sense.
I feel like we have constant surveys going in those markets, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot in the automotive sector in Detroit, I feel like. And then is that, what's driving Huntsville?
You know, same thing. I think it's a lot of aerospace, actually, in Huntsville.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you prefer the aisle seat or the window seat when you go fly on aerospace planes?
Oh, aisle for sure.
Yeah, me too.
For sure.
My daughter, Betty, prefers aisle seats, so whenever I fly with her, she bumps me to the window.
That's surprising. I would think that as a little girl, you would want to sit by the window.
Yeah.
See all the clouds. So. Yeah.
Roscoe's losing his damn mind out there.
Poor guy.
You know, poor guy, it's perfect day outside. I'm about to go. Have to let him inside if this continues. It's a nice weather outside. Go enjoy the sunshine. So, moving on to our next slide. The top U.S. industrial markets. And I'm going to let you take this, Cole, and I'm going to go get my barking dog. Maybe he stopped.
I think he calmed down.
Yeah, maybe he calmed down. Maybe a coyote was in my backyard. Who knows what was going on?
Don't joke about those coyotes.
Okay.
We'll come get you.
Why don't you talk about the top U.S. industrial markets?
The top U.S. industrial markets. Number one.
And your favorite thing about each of these cities.
Number one, 2023 net absorption, our very own DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth, at 28 million square feet. Chicago at number two, about 26.5 million square feet net absorbed. Houston, about 17 million net absorbed. Phoenix, 16.6 million net absorbed. And then Indy is going to round up this top five list of 2023 net absorption at 12.5%.
12.5 million.
12.5 million.
That is interesting to see Indy and Houston on there, but good for them for crushing.
Yeah,
that.
Houston at number three.
Yeah, that's a huge year for Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I bet it has a lot to do with Baytown.
Yeah.
You know,
with our homeboys over at TGS.
That's right.
And they've been building lots of big buildings out there. So out of these cities, which is your favorite city? You can't say Dallas.
Mm.
Chicago, Houston, Phoenix, or Indy? If you had to go there for a 2 week long vacation.
Well, it depends what time of year.
You can pick the time of year.
Well, I mean, I do love Chicago in the summer. But Phoenix, if it's not too hot outside, I mean, Phoenix is great. I'm definitely not picking Houston. Sorry to all my friends in Houston. Indy, you know, I guess they're St. Elmo's, but, you know, probably not picking Indy. So yeah, it's going to be a tie between Chicago and Phoenix.
I like that.
And Phoenix, you know, I think you got to pull in Sedona when you're talking Phoenix. So you could do both with Phoenix, and then that kind of shoots me toward Phoenix.
Did you know I'm going to Sedona next week? I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to fly into Phoenix, then go to Sedona. I went there before our Collier's Industrial Conference. I like to go there. Sedona Hot Yoga is one of my favorite yoga studios in the land. So yeah, I think I would do Phoenix. My dad's from Arizona. He grew up in Northern Arizona near Sedona. Moving on, the top markets for construction. This is under construction numbers. DFW leads again with 40 million, but that's down now to 30 as we approach. We're recording this on, what's the date? March 8th, 2024. So then Phoenix with 40 million. So they're right there. LA has 30 million, then Atlanta, then Chicago. That's a lot more normal of a list with all of those cities. They're expected to be on this list. The top industrial markets for growth in the United States, the fastest growing markets, and this is your 2023 new supply as a percentage of the total inventory. And a lot of these are also these markets we already mentioned, which have the highest year-over-year growth in vacancy, and that's number one, Savannah, Charleston, Austin, Treasure Coast. Where is Treasure Coast?
Yeah, Treasure Coast. I guess it's north of West Palm. So it's Indian River, Martin, and St. Lucie.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Have you ever done a deal there?
I haven't. No.
I didn't think so.
No. Yeah, I guess it looks like it's north of West Palm. So yeah, I'm not too familiar.
We like Miami proper. Like Poppy Steak, Miami. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I could have a little poppy steak right now, actually.
I could go for that. I love when they bust out the sparklers when someone buys the $1,000 steak. We've never done that before. The briefcase steak.
No.
We've contemplated it.
That pastrami is money, though.
Yeah. Dave Grutman, friend of mine, owns that restaurant in Komodo. I met him because he opened up Komodo in Dallas, and he's a fantastic restaurateur for those that are interested in going to have dinner at a nightclub in Miami. Go to a restaurant owned by Dave Grutman. They have amazing food. All of them do.
Komodo was another great one.
I'm so glad they're here. I'm addicted to it. I have an addictive personality.
If you can't tell.
Total inventory and vacancy rate year over year change. So this is like who had the biggest jumps in vacancy based on having huge amounts of inventory. And this is what really matters here. And that's LA got smashed because of their low deal activity.
But smash for LA is, you know, they're going from near 0%, you know, 1% vacancy all the way up to 3.4% vacancy. So it's still, you know.
So true, Cole.
Yeah, it's still not, you know, crazy.
Yeah, it's just all in the eye of the beholder, right?
That's right.
Chicago also went up 5.3% vacancy. Dallas is very high in most people's eyes at 8.5%. But really, like, Dallas has always been, I think most old school brokers in Dallas don't think that's that bad because it used to be like 10% was normal forever. And so 8.5%, it's higher than it has been, but it's still, Dallas feels really healthy to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
New York city metro area went up to, what is that?
4.7%.
4.7%. That seems pretty high for NYC metro. And then Hotlanta, Georgia, another great city, 6.6%. You know, I saw the Rolling Stones in Atlanta when they played on their last tour.
Wow. How's that? Was that with your dad?
No. I went with a gal.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I went with a buddy in Dallas to see the Stones, and they were so good. I bought a ticket to go to the Atlanta show, which was like a few days later. And I heard that they're playing in Vegas in May. So that might be cool.
Where in Vegas?
They're 80 years old. Mick Jagger and Keith Richards are 80 now.
Where would they be playing in Vegas?
I don't know. Can you Google it?
Would it be at the producer? What's that dome? What's that called?
The Sphere.
The Sphere.
I want to go there.
If they're playing at the Sphere, whoa.
I would love that. Man, their energy is undeniable. Do you have a favorite Rolling Stone song?
I can't even think of one right now, man.
I knew you were going to say that. You're from a different generation, aren't you?
That's right.
I think the Rolling Stones are the greatest rock band of all time, if you ask me. Greatest band, really.
What's your favorite song? Satisfaction?
I like that song. I like Honky Tonk Woman.
Ooh.
I like Dead Flowers. I like Some Girls. I like Far Away Eyes. So many. I love going to their concerts. It's my favorite thing to do. And I'm definitely going to go to Vegas. I don't care where they're
playing. Allegiant Stadium. So, yeah, the Raiders Stadium.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Yeah.
I haven't been there yet.
Yeah, supposedly it's a pretty cool stadium. I have not been yet.
So our next slide here, ladies and gentlemen, talks about the pace of rent growth is slowing as we get into 2024. And it's been growing so rapidly over the last several years, due to this whole COVID thing. And it's the increase has significantly dropped. However, the average rates keep continuing to, they're stabilizing. The rates aren't dropping, just the increase in annual percentage increase in rates is dropping. And we think, like we said earlier, basically when the vacancy levels out, the rates increases are going to level out. And that should be, like we said, probably the end of this year to middle of 2025, somewhere in there. And but the rents are holding pretty firm. If you want to go get the deals, there are certain places where you can go get deals and get better rates, depending on who the landlord is. But mainly going after the concessions is the thing to do right now take advantage of this
and
imbalance.
And it depends, you know, submarket to submarket within these markets as well.
Faux show. And yeah, the rent growth, hey, this is looking at all the markets and across the country, just showing like where this rent growth is. And it's 11% in DFW. It's pretty high. The high markets are DFW, New York Metro, Atlanta, Chicago, Phoenix. You can see like in LA and the Bay Area, it's gone down. The rent, Memphis has gone down. Detroit has gone down.
Surprising that Detroit is down.
That is.
With the lack of inventory there.
Very true. And then you have markets like South Florida, 22%. Wow. Year over year rent growth in 2023. But like we said, that should stabilize throughout most of this year, the rent growth. We don't think we're going to see too big of swings in rent increases, although it just depends on the submarket. Disclaimer. Okay, man. I think we've covered the U.S. If you're interested in which occupiers are leasing all of this space or lack thereof, Amazon led the country last year, 17 million square feet occupied. Walmart, and that's just that they took down in 2023. Walmart, pretty far behind at 5 million. Target, DHL, Tesla, Home Depot, Lowe's, FedEx. What up, FedEx? PepsiCo, Collier's client, and Sam's Club. I guess if you can combine Walmart and Sam's Club, that makes that number a little higher. And the sectors that are taking it down, as usual, third-party logistics companies account for 30% of the users that are leasing this space. Retailers, wholesalers account for the next big chunk, which is about 22%, and then manufacturing, which I think we're going to see a lot more of.
Yeah, I was going to see, what do you think about manufacturing, you know, for 2024, Ward? Do you think that number of 16.2% is going to increase?
I think it will. I think we're going to see it. We're seeing these solar deals get done here. I don't know if that's happening all over the country. We're not really repping any solar manufacturing companies, but they're definitely signing millions of square feet worth of leases in Dallas. So we will see. And I think manufacturing is going to be coming back to the U.S., but we're going to talk a lot more about that and nearshoring that's occurring in Mexico when we get to Mexico. But for now, we're going to move in to Canada, and we'll keep this brief. Hopefully, when I'm in Toronto in May, I can get Colin Alves or Graham Meter to hop on and give me an actual Canadian update from the Canadians, or some of our folks that'll be at our L&T conference in Toronto in May. Can't wait for that. But I mean, you're doing a lot of work in Canada, Cole. What's high level? What's your high level thoughts on that market?
Yeah, very similar to LA, I would say. You know, in Toronto or GTA as they call it, the Greater Toronto Area. You know, vacancy rates were over the last several years, you know, near 0%. I couldn't tell you what it is right now, probably closer to 2.5%. But a lot higher than what they're used to. They're seeing a lot of space coming back to the market for sublease. You know, they had seen rates increase over the last 3 years so dramatically. You know, 3 years ago, it was probably in the $8 to $10 triple net. A lot of those deals that are coming to market for sublease, you know, that's really what they're paying. Today, you know, a new deal for new construction, they're probably in the $18 to $22 triple net range. So it's, it's pretty insane how fast rent growth was, you know, in that Toronto market. And really same thing for Vancouver. Rent growth there has been, you know, extremely high and very fast. You know, it was crazy. We had several calls with Colin and, our guy, Pat Phillips in Vancouver. And, it just seemed rent growth were increasing every month. You know, as new comps would come out at a higher rate, it would really just set the new watermark. So yeah, it's pretty interesting right now where you have so much sublease space coming back, and you can actually, if you have a deal, if you have an opportunity, you know, I think there's some opportunity there for sure.
If you look at this chart here with national rent rate growth, and these are all national numbers. But really after COVID, you can see it spiked. And these are all quarterly bumps. So in Q2 of 21, it spiked 2%. And then in Q4, it spiked another 5%. And then Q2 of 22, it spiked 7.3%.
Yeah, there you go.
Then 8.5% in Q3 of 22. So that's when these really started jumping up, is towards the end of 22. Then up 4%. Started off last year up 6.6% in Q1 of 2023. And then it's just been trickling back down since then. So I think we'll see that continue until it stabilizes. And like everywhere else, I mean, it's... construction slowing down in Canada.
It was always really, I mean, it was already slow. They were, like I said, they were already at, you know, barely 0% vacancy, you know, 1% vacancy. And I think it's just very tough to build there. Very tough to get the zoning, takes a very long time, you know, not as business friendly and easy to construct buildings as good old DFW.
Yeah. Oh shit, Jimmy the kid just walked in. We're about to be prepping for, while we're doing this podcast, James is going to be prepping in his head for the DFW market update, which is coming up shortly on a different podcast, if you're listening to this, people. So this is just the Cole Hooper show. And that was a great assessment of the Canadian market. Yeah, the rates have gone. I remember when rates were like $5 a foot, and then they're like $20 a foot all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean more than office space in some cases.
Yeah. And the industrial development pipeline, of course, very similar to kind of the US in terms of what this graph looks like. It shot up and now it's leveling out. So vacancy will rise moderately in 2024, then stabilize. So we're not going to see the same type of vacancy levels increases occur in Canada like they did in the U.S. because they just don't build as much, you know?
Yeah. What was that on that graph earlier, Ward? Like 60 million under construction. And how much do we have? 600 million under construction?
Yeah. It's two different worlds.
That's right.
Okay, sublease availability is on the rise. We just signed a sublease listing agreement.
We did.
Didn't we?
We did.
In Toronto?
We did. We have not technically brought it to the market for sublease yet, but we are ready to go once we get the green light.
We're not going to talk about it on here, but you'll be getting email blast before you know it if you're on our email blast list. And if you'd like to be on our email list, you can sign up at truckinon.com. Oh, yeah. But yeah, there's been an uptick in sublease availability. That's happening everywhere. Construction costs are up as well. So it's not getting any cheaper to build, even though there's less construction happening. I like this slide. And if you want to go look at the deck, it's that will be linked on the show notes, slide 26. It shows the largest markets in North America since... we've been talking about North America. Just to start out, number one, LA, then Chicago, then DFW, then New York City metro area. Those are the top four in North America. And if you look at the size of these markets, it's like LA is 1.7 billion, Chicago is 1.5 billion, and DFW just broke the 1 billion threshold. Now, the 15th largest is Montreal, which is 360 million. And that's bringing me to what number 16 is, which is Mexico City, I believe. And that's 320 million square feet in inventory. And that's the largest market in Mexico. And now, bienvenidos a México. This is the Mexico portion of this presentation, or podcast, should I say. And we do a lot of work in Mexico now, and I'm thankful for it. Thanks to High-End Pena. We'll have to get him on the podcast. High-End Pena is our partner based in Juarez, and he helps us execute deals all over Mexico. He's with Colliers out of the Juarez office. And Cole, I mean, you are on the phone talking about Mexico deals all the time. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, you know, it's a very, very similar story to Canada. You know, there's not a lot of available space. Rates are increasing. It's very tough to it's very tough to build there. You know, I think if you do find a good piece of land, you know, the odds of it having the infrastructure, you know, the water, the utilities to the site, you know, I think those are the big items in Mexico that, you know, they struggle with sometimes. But it, very active there. You know, we have about, I think, 15 to 20 active projects there right now, between several of our clients. So it's, you know, I feel like I'm talking to High-End Pena almost every day these days.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like Canada, bro. It's like Mexico is a juggernaut. It's the, I think it's the toughest market to work in North America because the vacancy rates are so low, right?
Yes.
Now Canada was like that until 2023, but we've had a softening there, which has made it a little easier. I'm not like saying Canada's like South Dallas all of a sudden, but it is, I mean, Mexico is the most challenging market to find space in.
That's right. And I think to do deal, I mean, Canada is way more similar to the US, you know, if you're going to go in there and not know anybody or to do a real estate deal in Canada, I mean, you could really do it yourself if you had to.
Yeah, I mean.
Mexico, it's a completely different animal.
Yeah, for sure. But vacancy rates, if you look at the top markets in Mexico, which you got 1.1% in Mexico City, 1% in Monterrey, 1.4% in Guanajuato.
Guanajuato.
0.5% in Guadalajara. 1.7% in Querétaro, 0.3% in Tijuana. These vacancy rates are ridiculous. Juarez has 2.3%, and that's because they are actually, I think it's easier to build in Juarez, so they're just building a lot more there. But those are some of the top markets on the vacancy rates. The rents are ranging like, what, $5 to $10 a foot?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, $10, that's pretty high, I would say. You know, I think average would probably be closer to that $7 to $8.50 range.
Yeah. And there, the annual rental rate growth in Mexico, it's 20% in Mexico City, 20% in Monterrey, 10% in Guanajuato, 26% in Guadalajara. So big increases in rate. Tijuana went up 101%. We haven't done a deal in Tijuana yet, have we?
We've done a few surveys, but no, we have not closed a deal in quite some time.
These other markets we've transacted in, Querétaro.
Yeah, and I think the surveys were, there's no space available, so we should go look somewhere else or the requirement dies.
Yeah, Mexico industrial vacancy rates are still near the bottom, and they need to build more space, and hopefully they're doing that. And that's the next slide. Inventory is growing throughout Mexico. So you can look at this inventory chart here. If you go to the show notes on slide 29, and Mexico City is leading in terms of new inventory, followed by Monterey, Guanajuato, Guadalajara, all the usual suspects. The vacancy rates towards the bottom. We've got great graphs if you want to go look at the vacancy rates and the rental rates based on the top six or seven markets in Mexico. And like we said, here's the average weighted rents. If you're curious what rents are in Mexico, I've been asked this question before, $4 to $9.90 in Mexico City, $7 to $8 in Tijuana, $5 to $8 in Juarez, $4 to $8 a foot in Guadalajara. Monterey is just a booming market, $3.77 to $8. We're talking US dollars when we're talking all these rates.
And I don't think you're going to find, you know, like in the US or Canada where you can find those deals or the, you know, those subleases. You know, we're just not really seeing that right now in Mexico.
Yeah. And then in terms of construction activity, Monterey is leading the country with the actual product under construction, followed by Mexico City, followed, and Juarez is pretty much in line with that. Querétaro is behind that. Absorption, that's being led by Mexico City, followed by Monterey. So it seems to be like Mexico City and Monterey are the two most active markets, followed by Guanajuato. Why is this occurring? I think a lot of it is because of nearshoring. And a lot of Chinese manufacturers are moving to Mexico. The electronic components section, the automotive
yes, sector. Sir.
What else? Steel. And IT equipment. I said electronic components. Rubber products is a huge area of manufacturing that's happening there. So these manufacturers are coming, setting up shop. We're not doing manufacturing deals yet, but we work with a lot of the 3PLs that are supporting these manufacturers so that once they build their product, they need some place to store it and ship it out. And U.S. imports from Mexico are on the rise due to this nearshoring. And there's a great graph that you can go check out on slide 37 on this presentation. And it just shows how the Mexico imports to the U.S. have just spiked in 2022, 2023, and whereas China has dropped significantly. And that's what's happening. Why is that happening? Don't worry, I'm about to tell you. U.S. nearness is one of the top reasons why manufacturers are moving here, to be close to the U.S., to avoid supply chain issues from having to ship in via ocean product.
You know, one of the other things, you know, I think that people forget about is this, the time zones. You know, them being Mexico, you know, being in the, you know, our central eastern Pacific time zone corridor, it's a lot easier to do business than, you know, when you're 12 hours from us. You know, I think it makes a really big difference.
I've worked on deals in Asia before, and you're like outside talking on your phone at 9 o'clock at night. That's why I like to stick to North America, baby.
That's right.
We can do Asia. We can, but I like US, Canada, Mexico. No particular order. I like them all. Well, I like USA first because I'm, yeah. Come on.
DFW is pretty nice.
Texas.
Yeah.
I have two Texas tattoos on my body, so that shows where my loyalties lie. But the salaries, you know, cost of labor, qualified labor force. There's a huge qualified labor force. We're not doing labor analytics in Mexico, at least not yet. That's a problem in the U.S. It's not in Mexico. The infrastructure is okay, but it's not the top reason why manufacturers are moving there. It needs improving in certain areas.
Yeah, and water and power specifically.
Yeah, and roads. And that's just slowing down the development. And that's why these vacancy rates are so low. the tax structure is beneficial. And then the rule of law is another reason why it is an attractive investment destination for these manufacturers. And that's what we got on North America today, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed this, learned something new. Like I said, go to the show notes and you can, you might want to, this is good that I'm telling you at the end of the podcast, but if you want to go listen to this podcast again and follow along, then you can go to the show notes and upload this PowerPoint presentation that Cole and I have been referencing throughout this episode of Trucking On. Thanks for joining me, Cole Hooper.
Thank you, Ward. It was great to be here, man.
Say adios to my dear listeners.
Adios, amigos.
Thanks so much for checking out this episode of Trucking On. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by leaving us a 5-star review and by sharing this episode with your friends. Don't forget to head over to truckinon.com for book recommendations, official Trucking On merchandise, and you can sign up for my monthly newsletter. Thanks so much for tuning in and trucking on. All right. I'm gonna tell the truth to you till I break on through to the other side. Living like I'm gonna die is the only time I feel alive. Living like I'm gonna die is the only time I feel alive. And I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on. Move on down the line. Another town will do me fine. I'm trucking on. I'm trucking on. And I'm trucking on.